Okay, am I back?
You are.
All right.
Ed, conference record has joined the conference.
That's what I like to hear.
Just want you to know.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, everybody. Good afternoon. My name is Christopher Lucas, and with me today on the phone, we have a host of experts. So I'd like to tell you what it is that you're calling into. I believe most of you know. But today we are going to be discussing transportation options for people with dementia. The reason we bring this up is not only had a number of you shown interest in it a number of months ago and along the way, but we have a whole host of great resources on the issue, and it has been addressed by grantees in the past, and it taps into many of the branches of what you work on, from caregivers to volunteers to state government, to the federal government, and we thought it would be a good topic for this summer, if a lot of people hit the roads. With us today, we have Nina Silverstein, or Dr. Nina Silverstein, from the University of Massachusetts in Boston. We have Essie Wagner from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and Lisa Peters and Jed Johnson from the Easter Seals National Headquarters. And Essie, I realized that when I sent that thing out, I had said somehow that you're from the Alzheimer's Association, so I apologize for...
Correct.
We'd love to have you, and I think that's what I was getting at. Also, as usual, we have Diane Bronstein, who is here, and we have Meredith, who many of you have met over the last few months. And Meredith, is Lori with us today?
No, she's still on vacation.
She's still on vacation, okay. And also, I'd like to introduce Ashlyn Anderson, who will be taking over duties for me at the Alzheimer's Association. And you will come to know her very well, and she's a tremendously talented individual, so I'm sure these things will only get better. So I would like to invite Nina to start us off. A quick housekeeping note. Please put your phone on mute if you're not speaking. And if we can wait towards the end for questions, that'd be great, but obviously if you need something explained to you or there's an acronym that's used that you're not familiar with, please stop us and we'll make sure we get everything explained. And that should be it as far as housekeeping. So I'd like to introduce Nina. As I said, she's from the Gerontology Center of the University of Massachusetts, Boston, and a very renowned expert on this issue. And I guess, you know, Nina, I would say, I keep saying this issue, but I think I'd like to ask you right off the bat, what is the issue and what is the concern?
Well, first of all, I greatly appreciate this opportunity to address this audience. I'd like to start by putting it in context that this is just not an issue that that a few people are thinking about. And I want to start by saying that the White House Conference on Aging last December, two of the top 50 resolutions had to do with transportation and community mobility. In fact, resolution number 3 was to ensure that older Americans have transportation options to retain their mobility and independence, and that received over 1,000 votes from the delegates. And resolution number 47 was that to support older drivers to retain mobility and independence through strategies to continue safe driving. So that should really be our starting point, that that many people are recognizing this issue and wanting to move forward on strategies. So what is the issue? Let's start not with dementia and driving, but let's start with the older driver and the aging of America. We have, as this whole group knows, we have more older people today. In fact, there are 26 million people age 70 and older. They're driving more miles than ever before. They're driving at older ages than ever before. But now, the research shows that about 10 to 15% of older drivers are presumed to be at risk. So what does that say? That says that for the most part, older drivers are safe drivers. So this image of the older driver as being the bad driver is something that we really need to work against.
Mm-hmm.
Not about age, it's about it's about impairments in critical driving function. But having said that, it's more likely that an older driver who is in a crash will suffer a fatality. And that's because the older driver is more likely to have a fragile body, so that you're not as likely to walk away from a crash as the younger person might be. One of the aha moments that I had last year when I had the opportunity to be on sabbatical with the Department of Transportation was that some research I came across that said that driving expectancy is significantly less than life expectancy. It was an aha moment for me because the research by Dan Foley and others said that when you reach age 70, men are likely to have another 6 years. Men are likely to outlive their safe driving ability by 6 years, and women by about 10 years. So what that says is that all of us should be planning for a time when we're not driving. And I don't think that that's really on all of our radar. And then the other aha piece of research that I came across, which is one of those obvious statements, but not until you think about it, that you give up walking before you give up driving. You know, that you are able to get around, being disabled and being able to drive, but that it's not a matter of giving up driving and then hopping on a bus. That there are, and that there are few alternatives. At this point in time, there are few alternatives to driving. So that's if we're thinking about the older driver, the person aging in the general population. But then it's also true that older people will self-restrict. I'm sure we all know people who stop driving at night or might not drive in bad weather or might not do highway driving. And then my favorite one is that will not make left-hand turns. Well, and that's actually quite smart because many crashes actually do occur at that intersection, that making that turn, which is why the side impact airbag is so critical to the older driver. But what happens when there's a detour? Now, the person who's less likely to self-restrict is the person with dementia, and that's because that an individual with dementia. Is the executive function is impaired, and is less likely to have insight that there are issues associated with their driving. So that describes the issue. Do you want me to describe the concern right now?
Well, yes. I mean, is this?
So, what is the concern? The concern is that currently about 40% of fatal automobile crashes are alcohol related. But by 2025, more than 40% of all fatal crashes may be associated with age-related frailties, with visual and cognitive impairments as the major contributing factors. And that's coming from National Highway Traffic Safety Administration 2003 report. And that in a 1998 report from National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, it noted that cognitively impaired drivers are 7 times more likely than other drivers to have at-fault crashes. And then other research shows that 44% of early-stage persons with dementia routinely get lost. That's data coming from 1988 by Lucas Blaustein, driving in patients with dementia. And, Chris, as you and I have discussed, that's really where I started getting interested in the issue, is that having done work on Safe Return, the Alzheimer's Wanderer mm-hmm. program in the 90s, when I came across persons getting lost while driving, that also became like one of those threads that I wanted to have more time to explore because the idea of persons with dementia who were driving and getting lost.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the concern from my perspective.
Well, I mean, I guess I would, I would then ask you about, sort of the logical next step is that as part, as you read these things, as you like you said, you had the aha research. As you look at all of this, you what does it mean to be senior friendly and/or dementia friendly? Are these even the same thing, and why or why not?
Okay. To get us into that, how do we start transitioning from the pathway from being the driver to the passenger? But even before that, and I'm sure that Essie will likely address this too in terms of the screening and assessment of drivers. Like how do we even, get that conversation going to know that that's an issue? And also from the Department of Motor Vehicles perspective, people don't want to be in doctors. They don't want to be in a situation of taking away with having something to give toward. I mean, I want to know that if a person is unable to drive, that that person's still able to get around, and that there's more to life, while it's important, there's more to life than getting to and from your medical appointment and getting to and from the grocery store. Joe Coughlin at MIT talks about the ice cream cone test. If I want to get an ice cream cone on a summer night in July, will I be able to just go ahead and do that? Or is this going to, you know, do I have to call 2 days in advance and wait on the curb in order to be taken there? Helen Kirshner of the Beverly Foundation talks about, she calls it not the ice cream cone test, but the haircut, hairdresser test. Can I get to the beauty shop? In fact, when she's thinking, when Helen Kirshner thinks about senior-friendly transportation, she wants to know if it meets the five A's, and I think that these are very helpful to think about. She thinks in terms of, is the service available? Is it acceptable? Is it accessible? Is it affordable? And is it adaptable? So that's when you're thinking about senior-friendly transportation, and we can talk about what each one of those might mean. But I want to push it even further. I want, my vision is supportive, dementia-friendly transportation. And some of the items that might be included, the criteria that would do it for me in terms of dementia-friendly transportation, is that in the transportation world, when you think about curb-to-curb, you know, or you think about door-to-door, I think dementia-friendly really calls for arm-through-arm. It talks about door through door. It would talk about more flexible kinds of scheduling practices. The person with cognitive impairments who needs to call, you know, 2 days in advance for an appointment, and then has to, you know, have the burden of trying to recall where they're supposed to be, when they're supposed to be there. The person with cognitive impairments is not going to be served well by just being dropped at a destination without being handed off to a responsible person. I think that the driver training and sensitivity that Easter Seals displayed in their Transportation for Solutions Caregiver Toolkit, which included a video which addressed some of these issues, I think is important. And then I think that some of the my own work that I've done in terms of vehicle features to promote safety and comfort, adaptations to the vehicle itself, I think are important. But I don't know. I mean, we don't. There's plenty more other ways of thinking of what dementia-friendly transportation would be. I don't think that paradigm has been written yet. But I would also suggest to you that at this point in time, there are some examples of models of senior-friendly transportation, but that they're really not as prevalent as we need them to be.
Well, if we want to make them more prevalent, one of the places to begin looking is seeing, you know, where in the states or what the states can even do about it. And so, you know, what do you see the role of state government, you know, particularly grantees and their partners, you know, the folks who are on this call, you know, what can their role be in this issue? Are they catalysts? Are they obstacles? You know, what do you recommend? Where do you recommend, rather, people starting to look within their own, you know, within state government to initiate conversation and ultimately action?
Oh, absolutely. I think that that people are catalysts, catalysts for action. And I think a good example is to establish, and this is coming from S.E. Wagner, to establish statewide safe mobility task forces that include that on the older road users. So we're talking about the driver and the pedestrian, and that groups that might want to come together to that table are the Departments of Motor Vehicle, Departments of Elder Affairs, the Department of Transportation, and clearly the Alzheimer's Association would want to be at that table, or Departments of Health and Human Services. I think a good state to look at in terms of having pulled those groups together is Florida. They have a Florida At-Risk Driver Council, which has been meeting for a long time. Their mission statement is to help ensure safe mobility for Florida's elders, which enhances dignity, quality of life, and independence throughout their lifespan. And they've brought together, you know, players, you know, from Highway, from Elder Affairs, from the Alzheimer's Network, from the larger aging network, that are really trying to grapple with that issue. Another area which I think is is very important, and it's something that, you know, I as a gerontologist, I, you know, haven't paid too much attention to, is the medical advisory board activity in the state. It was very interesting to me to learn that in some states you have physicians who are full time, and some states you have physicians who are volunteer their time to review cases that are reported to the Department of Motor Vehicle. Learning about you know, the reporting practices in different states, the voluntary versus the mandatory reporting. I heard from the physicians group that physician immunity would go a long way to getting doctors to comply with being able to report on a voluntary basis, even drivers who may be unsafe. I think that both sides of the issue need to be worked, both the safe mobility in terms of driving, and also the issue in terms of building strategies for community mobility options. One thing that that you and I had talked about before, I mean, I also got excited with the federal highway guidelines for older road users. These are over 100 recommendations that that states can do in terms of their roadways. And this, I'm sure many of us have seen the larger font that are used, the Clearview font that are used on signage, and the left-hand turning lanes, and how long it takes an individual to walk across the street. I mean, what I say to my students who come back to me and say, well, my town say that they just don't have any money for health or human services, I said, well, you know, take these recommendations to your town meeting and other 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 forms of government, that you know, if you don't, they're always talking about roadways and concrete and everything, and say that, okay, when you're doing new roads, you know, go ahead and look at these guidelines and make sure that that you're implementing them, because that would go a long way for older driver and pedestrian safety. So that's it a little bit, but I know that Essie would have more. Oh, and actually,
well, right, and I think, you know, that's it's actually a good, you know, you brought up a few things, this, for example, statewide mobility task forces, among other things. You know, I'd like to give Essie just a chance here to talk a little bit about what the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration is and does, and why it's a player in this issue, and how it's a player in this issue. And Essie, a little bit, if you can kind of describe, you know, some of the work that you've done with NHTSA, but also why this is important.
Okay, then. Yes, I work for NHTSA, which is the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. You're probably familiar with us from activities like the PSAs for the crash test dummies and drunk driving. We're also responsible for automobile recalls and the likes. But in addition to those types of things, we have a behavioral safety program, and that is where older driver safety falls under. The reason that I am here is I'm responsible for making sure that any research that touches on older drivers gets put into something that can be used. I'm sort of the craftsperson that says, okay, I've got a great tool, let's use it.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason, we also are a data collection organization. In every year, there are more than 5,000 people who are over age 65 who are killed in automobile crashes. That's motor vehicle occupants, and there are almost 1,000 fatalities among pedestrians. They are overrepresented relative to their proportions in the population, and that's why we got interested in this. We also know that there are currently 29 million licensed drivers over age 65. That's a lot of people, and of course we know it's all going to get better. One of the things that you may be saying, well, you know, well, I don't want to think about this because I'm talking about people with dementia. Even so, we're talking about 87 to 90% of the trips that are taken by all people of age 65 and older are taken in personally owned vehicles. They're either drivers or they're in the passenger seat. One of the things that we're working on is trying to find the right leverage points to move people, to transition people from the driver's seat to the passenger seat. One of the things that we have, I talk about the theoretical construct, which is just my way of thinking about who plays a role in keeping older drivers safe. And Nina alluded to some of this, and I echo everything that she said so far. The people that we work with to try to make sure that everybody's safe out there as drivers are medical groups, for example, the American Medical Association or the American Occupational Therapy Association, social services organizations like N4A, the National Association of Area Agencies on Aging, and the American Society on Aging, law enforcement organizations, as well as licensing authorities. They have an organization in terms of that. But we also look at other activities. One of the things that Nina alluded to was coordination of services. One important organization that we have is a government-wide organization called United We Ride that is sponsored within the Department of Transportation through our Federal Transit Administration. And what we're trying to do is get all the people who provide transportation to talk to each other, and which is a huge step. You would not even believe how challenging that is, and to get them working together on making sure that services are coordinated, so we don't have five buses going from A to B, and you know, taking one passenger per trip. In terms of what we're doing here at NHTSA is we have a lot of focus on functional abilities that need to be in place for driving. We look at vision. We look at physical function, both the ability to move your foot and the ability to feel it, for example. And then we also look at cognitive function. And that was a lot of what Nina was doing while she was here, was helping guide us and say, okay, where are we on this?
Mm-hmm.
Because we really didn't have much of a clue in terms of what sorts of things we should be saying. Now, I mean, the important thing to be aware of in terms of dementias is, and particularly Alzheimer's disease, is that the memory for how to drive and the rules of the road do remain intact. However, the short-term memory, as you all well know, can get a little fuzzy there, and that's when you get people who are getting lost. They may stop on green lights. They may get into the wrong turn lane or stop suddenly for no apparent reason. And what we're doing with all of our activities, all those the theoretical framework that I was talking about, is try to get each of those areas, the medical, social services, law enforcement, and licensing, to know what to do.
At the state and federal levels?
At the state and actually more on state and local. Federal, we sort of do leverage. We say, please do stuff. But we don't have the ability, for example, with licensing and driver licensing. That is a state function, and it has to be done at that level. And so what we try to do is give the states the best information possible in terms of all of what we're doing and say, well, hey, can you do this? Can you change your policies this way or whatnot? One thing that I don't want to lose in all of this is this sort of the concept of, you know, who's in your Rolodex. I'm a firm believer that everybody in your Rolodex, from your nail salon and your hairdresser and all of those folks, all of those people have a role in terms of protecting older driver safety. And you think a nail salon, yeah, they talk to people all the time who are coming before them, and they can make some good recommendations. So, you know, if you're out there and you're talking to folks, and you want to start one of these task forces, yeah, sure, you work with the most obvious, but when you have the most obvious in place and you need more, keep on digging. You'll find people in the area agencies on aging, the automobile AAA, AARP, and so on, who are able and willing to help you.
Well, and so, you know, my next question would be a little more, you know, you talked about what the federal government, you know, what NHTSA can do, and identified some of those areas within state government that, you know, our grantees could hook into. But, you know, what are some of the future issues coming up? I know you and I had talked a little bit about the American Association of Motor Vehicles.
One of the things that we are trying to do is sort of harmonize the licensing requirements across states. So we don't have, you know, some states that have lenient requirements and some states that have extra firm requirements. We want to make sure that it's based on the functional ability of the individual, so that if they are functionally able to control the vehicle and navigate and all the everything that we want them to be able to do to stay safe, then they should be able to stay as drivers and maybe as restricted drivers. You know, if they want to do that, that's fine. I'm totally okay with that. But I don't want to have a state that is not even looking. And that is unfortunately the case in some places. And one of the things that Nina was alluding to there was the medical advisory boards. We're trying to make sure that we've just developed some model legislation with an organization called NCUTLO, which is, the National Committee on Uniform Traffic Laws and Ordinances. And it really talks about making referrals to the DMV for drivers who have any sort of impairment. And it's not age-related at all. You know, we just want to make sure that the referrals can be made, that physicians can remain immune from civil liability, that the information that's released is covered under HIPAA, all of those things. So that is available and out there. The other thing is there are tools that are out and available. All you have to do is ask for them. And that's always the nice thing. You know, in most cases, they're free. Or you can you know, beg.
Right.
And all those good things. One thing that's a fabulous tool, if you're not familiar with it, is the Hartford Insurance Companies at the Crossroads, which is just a really nice, sensitive guide to having a conversation with somebody about driving, because, as you know, it's not a matter of, you know, if you're going to stop driving when you come in with a diagnosis. It's a matter of, you know, when you have to stop driving. These are the things you're going to have to agree to.
And I would, at the tail end of this, I would like, you know, the three of you to speak about, you know, what you find, you know, the maybe the two best resources on the issue for those who are learning to, you know, seek other forms of mobility, but also for families, because I'm sure it is a hot topic that, you know, finds its way into our grantees' lives as well, not only personal lives, but professional lives. So, sort of getting into that a little bit more, I'd like to invite Lisa Peters to talk a little bit about what they've done at Easter Seals on this issue. They've, you know, done the footwork, so to speak. And you know, Lisa, I'd like to, you know, ask you sort of about Easter Seals' experience in senior transportation. But I know, you know, you have a background in dementia care, and how does that influence the perspective of the organization?
Well, I am also very pleased to be able to share some information with you and speak with Nina and Effie, who have made a huge impact in the field over the last several years. In terms of Easter Seals, a lot of folks are still yet to relate Easter Seals and older adult services. But in fact, Easter Seals does have, has been providing adult and senior services for decades, and we do have one of the largest nonprofit networks of adult day service programs. And as many of you know, the adult day services programs serve a high percentage of folks with dementia. In addition to that, Easter Seals has been working with the FDA for 15 years now on a project called Project Action. And the primary goal of Project Action was to really bring together the disability community and the transportation community to provide accessible transportation for folks with disabilities. And they've played an instrumental role over the last decade and a half in really helping integrate the whole idea of accessibility into transportation. Just very recently, Easter Seals was just awarded a cooperative agreement with the FTA for the National Technical Assistance Center for Senior Transportation. And that brings together a number of partners nationally and really is going to be working on integrating senior transportation and good senior transportation practices into the transportation network and into new solutions and options throughout the country. So we're excited to be involved in that. So that's sort of Easter Seals history. We also, in 2001, I believe, received a grant from the Administration on Aging under the National Family Caregiver Support Program that we entitled Transportation Solutions for Caregivers. And that program created tools and materials specifically addressing the needs of caregivers when it came to transportation. And as Nina alluded to, there was a toolkit that was produced around transportation. It was called Transportation Solutions for Caregivers, a Starting Point. And that is a video and a booklet. And it really targets family caregivers who are grappling with the everyday issues of transportation for their loved ones. And that video is available, and we'll talk about that a bit later. But much of the information addressed in that set of materials specifically is for folks caring for loved ones with dementia. And I suppose, Chris, you asked me how my background in dementia care sort of was brought into the organization and how it made some impact in that way. And I guess it would be through that method and also through just really working with, starting to plug away with other experts in the field in terms of what can we do to improve, to increase capacity, to really raise awareness about the special needs of people with dementia after they stop driving.
Well, and so, you know, sort of in that after they stop driving, I've heard, and I'm sure other folks here have heard the phrase, you know, continuum of care. And you had an interesting phrase the other day where you said, you know, your concern and your focus is on the second half of continuum of care. And if you don't mind explaining that a little bit and what you meant by that, I thought it was pretty interesting.
Sure. Well, Nina, I think that's actually a term that Nina may have coined, but it's looking at the second half of the continuum, and not so much the continuum of care, but the continuum of mobility, the mobility continuum.
Sorry, you're right. I did mean mobility.
No, that's okay. So in this sort of, if you can visualize this, the first half of the continuum is that when people are able to be independently mobile, whether that means walking or bicycling or driving themselves or navigating public transportation, that's sort of the independence. And then as most of us have either experienced or understand, there is this really heartstring tearing experience when somebody needs to give up the keys, which many families have told me is one of the more difficult things they had to grapple with as, with their family member with dementia, is giving up the keys. And when the whole issue of transitioning from driver to passenger, as Nina mentioned earlier. And so the second half of the continuum is sort of that transition process to the community mobility options. How are we going to keep people enmeshed in the community, connected to the community, after they're no longer driving themselves, and this is from obviously a quality of life standpoint for the people with dementia as well as their loved ones who are their caregivers, but it has other sort of threads which are contributing to the economy. People should be interested in this. As Cassie was saying, you know, your everyday network of service providers in the community can be supportive and helpful around senior transportation, and they should also want to be interested because those are the folks that are going to continue to be supported by folks after they give up their keys if there are proper mobility mm-hmm. options for them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mentioned in the beginning, you know, you of the talk, you guys have actually done a grant, I think it was through the Family Caregiver Support,
mm-hmm.
You've actually done a grant on, you know, improving transportation and mobility, and I wanted to, you know, if you could explain for our audience, you know, what some of those, you know, challenges and opportunities were that came of that, you know, what's to be expected if you want to initiate something involving transportation, and what are the rewards?
Well, I think I'm going to have to build on what Nina and Essie have already talked about in sort of coalition building, but really tapping into the partnership in your communities and in your states. Our project was a national project, and the first thing and most important thing that we did as part of our project is to pull together people that had background on these issues, that had a stake in these issues, and could help guide the project. They could buy into the project. They could help spread the word. They were our best marketers. They were our best friends. And I think that those were the most important parts of this. And being around transport, you know, talking about transportation, as we've all mentioned now, is not just about transportation. Yes, it's important to have the folks that have transportation services around the table, but even more or equally as important is having the stakeholders around the table that are the advocates for older adults, advocates for dementia, for special needs of people with dementia, and having folks around the table that can really mobilize the system. In terms of how things worked out, you know, I think mm-hmm. that one of the successes that was realized through the project was really through identifying gaps. And, you know, there's a lot of talk in the field now about asset mapping and seeing what communities and states have in terms of assets. And in so, you're identifying gaps. And I think that is one of the things that as we were going through the process, we were able to see that these are some needs that folks were experiencing and find some areas that were not yet addressed. And I think that that's an important thing to do at a state level and a community level, is look at, you know, what are the issues, what things do we see big gaps in, and what are the, you know, the overarching issues that people are dealing with in this area.
So, well, that's some just very good common sense advice too. I mean, I think our grantees are always inquisitive and always looking for how to, you know, to connect you know, the topics of these teleconferences and others, you know, into their grant. And what I'd like to do now is, you know, ask you know, Nina, Essie, and you too, Lisa, if there's any questions you have for each other or anything that you wanted to elaborate on or anything like that before I open it up to the room, so to speak.
Yes, this is Essie speaking again. I would like to sort of follow up on the increase the capacity for the second end of the continuum of care. And I want to talk a little bit about the front end of that. One of the things that we've been working on is working on doing the assessments. How do you figure out whether or not somebody is safe to continue driving? And we've been working with the American Occupational Therapy Association to increase the capacity of people who can do driving assessments. And I just want to point out a resource that's available there. If you go to aota.org/older driver, you can find somebody who you can search by state in there. So you can find people who can do assessments in your area. And OTs are generally very helpful people and are likely to want to be engaged with any activities that you might have.
Okay, this is Nina. I was wondering if Jed wanted to say anything at this point before I continue.
You know, Jed is under the weather, so he wasn't able to join the call.
Oh, okay, fine.
But it was very nice of you to ask.
Okay, let me follow up on the point on occupational therapists. One thing that states need to be aware of, and this is a particular dilemma in terms of persons with dementia, is that if on the one hand a person with dementia goes through a specialized driving assessment and is then told, okay, I'd like to see you at 6 months or 9 months or 12 months, that you're okay to drive. Each time that person goes through that assessment, it's I've heard anywhere from $300 to $800, and that's private pay out of pocket. The reimbursement mechanism is not there. This is not, even though the Occupational Therapy Association is in my opinion, rightly saying driving is an instrumental activity of daily living, and that is what the message they've really been trying to get across. That it's where it's very difficult for the where's the incentive for the individual and the family to voluntarily comply with these types of assessments when it's cost. So that's one thing to mention. Another area that is of interest to me is that it's interesting to me that in the disabled world we understand the concepts of travel trainers and mobility managers. In the aging network, I don't think that that's translated in a big way. What do I mean by travel trainers? That's a person that will help you negotiate the new the community mobility option, the public transportation option, or any other mode that's outside of driving. That person is going with you and teaching you the system, kind of like I could see in terms of dementia having that type of travel training buddy, somebody to be with you. It's not going to be someone who could just show you, you learn it, and you go, but it's got to be this kind of travel buddy that you have with you. Particularly in the early stages of dementia, the individual is working or volunteering, and civic engagement is as important as to the person with dementia as it is to the non-cognitively impaired individual. Mobility manager is the person that helps you negotiate the system. Okay, we can get you from A to B, and this is how you do it. And that concept, where's the creative approach to trying to bring that concept into the aging network as well. I also wanted to mention, I know that you said, Chris, that we'd have an opportunity in terms of resources, but let me just mention a few things that I find useful. The American Medical Association, in cooperation with National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, came out with a physician's guide for advising and counseling the older driver. Now, as useful as it is to look at this guide, which is available in CD form and limited copies in hard copy, but as useful as it is to understand what the physician is looking for in terms of assessing the older driver, I find the appendix very valuable because it's a state-by-state licensing and renewal requirement. So, and it's fascinating to look at the years interval for renewal between one state and another and across the board. Actually, isn't it interesting that as we're moving toward more automated calling in renewal by mail or internet, that in my opinion, that works against the individual with dementia, because I would want that person looked at in person.
Mm-hmm.
And up until a few years ago, well, it's still 18 years in Florida that you can go up until age 79, and then it's, well, let me just go back a second, that you get your license, and then you've got and then you're a lot, and that's for 6 years, and then you're able to renew twice by mail, so it's another 12 years. That technically you can go 18 years without, you know, having a vision test in Florida. Now they've changed it that after age 79, it's a more frequent in-person renewal. But you can. I've heard that people make retirement decisions as to where they're going to live based on how that license renewal is going.
Hmm.
Another term to throw out to you is...
Okay, and then I'm going to have to open it to questions.
Okay. STP, Supplemental Transportation Program. And the Beverly Foundation has identified, I think, over 400 of these communities options available, and those are good models to be able to look at. And I'd also want to mention the ITN, the Independent Transportation Network, which is a program that's rolling out in a couple of states now, which is it's a community mobility option that's by passenger vehicle, and it's something to look at. And also CTAA, Community Transportation Association of America, and that this is an organization that's able to help you look at your transit systems and make them more friendly. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I know you're going to open it up to questions. If there are a few minutes at the end, there are just a couple other questions.
Right. I would like to end on the resource, the specific resources also, like Nina mentioned.
Okay.
But I would like to make sure there's ample time for the people on this call to ask questions of all of you.
Right.
So I'm, you know, please just say, you know, your name and where you're from, and there are no silly questions, so feel free to ask away.
Chris, this is Diane.
Hey, Diane.
How are you?
Okay.
You know, early on in the phone call, I think somebody mentioned that a good way to sort of figure out what's going on in your state is to, you know, compare the standards of what's going on in your state with older drivers and other states.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering, I believe maybe it's the insurance industry, but somebody actually puts out like a quick little chart of that information. And I was wondering if anybody was familiar with that chart and who puts it out so that people could take a look at it. Do, do, do.
I'm not familiar with, this is Lisa, and I'm not familiar
okay.
with that, but it sounds like a fantastic resource if somebody
can find it.
Us. Yeah.
Okay.
But actually, Essie, wouldn't it be the CRAS data from, you know, that would also be able to, is that available by state and age? Is Essie still there?
I am still here. I just put myself on mute. I'm sorry. I was going on there for a second. yes, that is available by state. If you go to the NHTSA website, which is www.nhtsa.dot.gov, and then click on the traffic safety data stuff, or just email me, and my email will be made available through the end of this. And ask for the specific information. I can give you the absolute link.
Now, I have one more question, and I'm just going to ask it so people will know that I've asked it, but I don't really expect an answer to it right now, which is, you know, we've heard a lot about good examples, and I know, you know, there isn't time in this phone call to talk about best practices, but maybe it will be useful to everybody if the presenters could maybe provide to Ashlyn Anderson here in our office their top maybe 3 to 5 best resources or best practice examples,
mm-hmm.
and then she could send that out to people later. I don't know if that would make sense.
Well, I think that would. The email address is aanderson@alz.org. I would actually like
No.
No?
No.
What is it?
Ashlyn.
Oh.
Let her say. It's her.
Ashlyn, please.
Yes, it's Ashlyn, A-S-H-L-E-N, dot Anderson, at A-L-Z, dot org.
Internally, it's A. Anderson. I would also like to ask, you know, the folks who are on the phone, are there any specific resources that you would like to see regarding this issue? Would there be anything that would be particularly helpful in either breaching the subject or, you know, within your state or with your volunteers?
My name is Joyce Lemire. I'm with an area agency on aging in rural Vermont. Mm-hmm. And I guess having listened to all this, one of the questions I have is, we meet regularly with these transportation advisory boards in our county, and they're very interested in culverts and bridges and roads. And trying to get them involved in the kinds of issues that you're discussing has been a challenge. I guess I'd be interested in knowing if with these best practices, you would have any examples of how you get more involvement in the local community to support this.
Now, when you say they're interested in culverts, bridges, and roads, is that, can you elaborate a little?
Well, there's a group of like these advisory boards that are appointed by their local selectmen, and they're involved sometimes on a county basis or on a regional basis, and they get together and they prioritize transportation issues, supposedly, and work closely with the state transportation group to set these kinds of priorities. But when it comes to the local service providers, there's not, it's been just a challenge to get them willing to advocate for improvements in just in real basic areas.
Well, that's a perfect example where I call it the purple book, but we'll make sure that that we have that on the site for you, which is the recommendations by Federal Highway, that if you can get them, you know, say, okay, if you're focusing on roads, then let's talk about those left-hand turning lanes and the curb cuts and the signage and the width of the stripes that you have, the rumble stripes and areas, and start giving them all their engineering and planning terms. And if you can get them to start paying attention to some of the of those federal highway, you know, in engineering language kinds of terms, that would be an incredibly wonderful first step. And then you could start.
Hey, I agree. That's a great idea.
And then another thing is to get yourself appointed to one of those planning boards. That is always very helpful to have the point of view of a representative from the aging community. Right now I live in Arlington, Virginia, and we're going through a master transportation plan that will cover the next 30 years. And they said, oh yeah, you know, that's going to map perfectly with when those aging baby boomers, you know, get up there. So they actually put the Disability Rights Commission, they put the Aging Services Commission, they put everybody onto the Transportation Master Planning Commission to put this thing together. And it's a much better plan now than it would have been if it had just been the transportation nerdos like me getting in a room and hiding out. So that's another you should try too.
Can I ask one last question here, which is regarding the our friend from Vermont just, you know, made me think of it, and I'm sure Mike Splane would ask it if he were here, which is what or, you know, if there is one, what is the rural angle here for, I mean, because there's certainly different mobility options in Arlington, Virginia than there is in upstate Vermont. You know, what are the ways that states can be creative? Is there anything that any of you have seen in sort of the rural health care or rural mobility delivery?
Well, in terms of rural, you know, rural America and mobility options, I know that the Beverly Foundation and CTAA has put out a report. I know they were doing some research recently. But what we see in those areas is a lot more of the grassroots type efforts. So we see a lot of volunteer organizations, and we see smaller programs popping up to help fill some of those gaps. So there, that is often what's currently in place. I don't know if Effie and Amina have seen some planning for those areas that might give some other examples.
Well, under United We Ride, there is some activity on that, but I would really encourage people to go to the CTAA website, and I believe that somebody can correct me if they're wrong. It's ctaa.org, and that's Community Transportation Association of America. They have some really great tools in terms of getting people, you know, spooled up on laws and regulations, senior transportation, medical transportation, and so on. Don't go reinventing the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Go and find something that's already ready-made.
Mm-hmm. And to follow up on both of my colleagues, I've heard some wonderful anecdotal stories about volunteers in terms of rural transportation. And this one particular volunteer who would drove 100 miles, and then since the individual was receiving, the passenger was receiving some medical treatment, this volunteer ended up volunteering at the hospital during that time period. So I think that those stories from the road, which is an example of, again, coming out of the Beverly Foundation, and the supplemental transportation programs and their recruitment of volunteers, their creative recruitment of volunteers, I think is also a way to look. And as both Effie and Lisa said, this is an area where I have just been so impressed with the resources and toolkits that are out there particularly Drivewell. Effie, how could we not talk about Drivewell, which is a train-the-trainer model for community conversations on driving. So there's just this wonderful, wonderful, easy-to-follow, good messaging out there that should be very helpful to anybody who wants to pick it up.
Well, and what we're seeing in areas that may be adjacent to more metropolitan areas, but they're rural areas, and is the idea of the public-private partnership in providing senior and, in some cases,
dementia-friendly transportation, in that you're seeing some volunteer groups partnering with established transit organizations to provide some of that care,
mm-hmm.
some of that transportation. And they can be a great example, because arm through arm and door through door transportation is really very expensive. Folks are out there trying to figure out
solutions and more economical ways to provide this, the kind of transportation that people with dementia really need. And sometimes the volunteer type transportation, the more personal transportation, is a great example. It's a great learning for established, you know, transportation providers.
Well, thank you. I'd like to thank you all. We've hit our hour mark. I would like to remind folks that this has been recorded, that our speakers will be sending their top two or three resources to Ashlyn at her correct email address. And, you know, they made their contacts available. If any follow-up, feel free to contact Ashlyn, and she can reach her speakers or myself. But, you know, on a personal note, I would like to thank all of you. I've had a great time doing these. Thank you for coming out and listening, and I'm glad that they've been useful for the most part, and I'm sure they will be even better with Ashlyn at the helm. Meredith or Diane, do you have any last words?
No, but thank you for listening, and thank you all the presenters for their very informative information.
Thank you so much to our presenters. Thank you, Nina. Thank you, Effie, and thank you, Lisa.